CLS is go for main engine start.
Go at throttle up. Negative return. And we see a nominal MECO. Welcome to space.
Boy, am I glad this week is over, Anthony.
Marina, Jake quit his job this week.
Did you?
I did, yes.
Are you excited about it? Or
I'm very excited about it. I want to do this more. I want to do this a lot more. And, you know, when you run a show as a hobby, there's only so much time for it. And so I'm taking a scary little leap and I quit my job and I'm going to try and make something work here. So it's really exciting. So this is the week that I had to like communicate to like the whole world, like everyone had to find out, and it was just like mentally exhausting. And but I'm excited, some fun stuff, and then capping it off with an off nominal podcast is perfect. I love it.
Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you. Welcome to the show, Marina Corin. Corin, is that how you say it?
It is, yes, that's right.
Okay.
Should have done your prep earlier, Jake. Way to go.
I've been busy this week. So writer at The Atlantic, one of my favorites. I love reading your stuff. So thanks for coming on the show. We're just really excited to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Can I do a shout out to The Atlantic real quick? The Atlantic is one of the only publications out there that lets you subscribe to RSS feeds by writer. So,
yes.
And it is amazing. Like, I can get all of your stuff in a feed, and I wish every other publication would do that, and almost nobody does. And it makes a huge difference. So to whoever at The Atlantic likes RSS feeds, I applaud you.
I didn't realize we had that. I didn't know that was available.
It's available, so, yeah, and that's Atlantic. Why I read all your stuff. So it's amazing. So find that person and just say, keep doing that, please.
I can send you a link to yourself if you want, and then you can see it.
It'll be in the show notes. It'll be in the show notes, because everyone should subscribe to that, and RSS in general. And it's not dead. You're actually listening to it right now if you're listening to a podcast. So keep it alive, nerds.
RSS.
I don't know things. Why I went into an RSS plug here. Marina, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Let's see. We had our company holiday party last night. The Atlantic company holiday party. So that was fun.
How you feeling?
Let's see. I've got some tea with me. And I had some ramen for lunch, so I'm doing much better.
Nice. Yeah, this is a matinee edition. Usually we do the show at night. But we've got some other circumstances that make that impossible, including Jake quitting his job and schedules being weird. So this is a matinee edition, especially for Jake. I don't know, Jake, are you drinking anything at this early hour?
Yeah, I kind of went for it, you know, like I'm unemployed now, so.
You're allowed.
So, yeah, I found this beer at the one across the street from my house. It is a Vancouver beer from Off the Rail Brewing Company, and it was perfect because it's called Comet Launcher, and it's got a hops flying to space on it, and I thought that was a good.
You have so much space beer out there. It's so hard for you to find anything out here that's space themed at all.
I don't have much space gear at all. My mug right now, I will show you. It's a shark, and it says "Don't tell me to smile." I That's don't perfect. Have much space gear. I need to get on that, though.
he just has so much space. Everything's space-themed out in the Pacific Northwest.
And I didn't even, like, know. So I went out with some friends last night and went to just, like, a random brewery that someone suggested. And it turned out to be a space-themed brewery, like, 10 minutes from my house. And I was so upset that I didn't know about it. Because all my friends are like, why are you so upset? And I'm like, you're talking to one of two people that have a beer themed space podcast in the whole world. And I didn't know about this brewery so close to me. And I was really upset. But so that we're going to feature beers from that one pretty soon, I think. But I had this one in the fridge already, so I'm just going to go with this one this time.
I don't have a space themed beer. I have a Workhorse Brewing Company Hazy Lager. This is out in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. I don't know why I said that. King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. One of the weirdest town names that we have. It's not far from Havertown, Pennsylvania, which we'll talk about shortly. It'll be relevant. That's a Chekhov's Havertown reference.
This sounds so ominous. Wait, why is it going to be relevant? I didn't study for this.
You did. You did study for this, because one of the topics we wanted to talk about today was Apollo 12.
Okay.
So now you're feeling better? Yes. Are you feeling better about this?
I am. Okay. I think I know where you're going with this. Go on.
Well, Jake was like, oh, we got to talk about Apollo 12. Jake was the only person who was like, I love the 50th anniversary of Apollo 12. And then he was like, oh my gosh, Marina wrote a whole article about the 50th anniversary of Apollo 12. And that is why he was like, we got to get her on this episode. Jake, why are you in love with Apollo 12?
Because Apollo 12 is like, it's the off-nominal Apollo mission. Like, let's be serious, right? Like, it's the one that was just like a little wonky. It's if there was an Apollo mission that needed to be the mascot of this show, it would be that one. It just had so many, like, in the foil of Apollo 11, which was so regal and like, you know, it, like American flag. It was just Apollo 12 was just like getting real. You know, it was like real people that went there and goofed around, and I don't know. It was really fun. I love it. I think it's so cool, and you like it too. So it seems perfect.
So I like it because it is my hometown moonwalker. That there was a Pete Conrad was born in Philadelphia and went to school over in Havertown, Pennsylvania, which is what I was talking about. And so I love Apollo 12. I'm just digging it. And it was just your story captured this perfectly. So you wrote this pretty long form article about everything on Apollo 12. I'm curious to know like where the inspiration for that came from. Are you similar to Jake in that you're like, look how weird this mission is, and that's why you were writing a big story about it, or was there something else?
I think I had just gotten over my Apollo 11 50th anniversary hangover. And then it was like, it was time. Like Apollo 12, the anniversary came right around the time that I was like, oh, okay. Yes, there's more to this program than Apollo 11. And so over the summer, I read pretty much every transcript for the Apollo 11 mission from launch to landing. And I did the same thing for Apollo 12 because all of that's available. I mean, all, you know, I'm sure NASA cuts some things out, but, you know, they put most of the transcripts online. And so I'm reading through the communications from Apollo 12. It's like, wow, this is rowdy. This is a little, like Pete Conrad was a potty mouth. There was a lot of swearing, a lot of joke. Yeah, that has to be why. And so there was a lot of swearing and joking around, and I mean, I showed my editor a few pieces from the transcript, and she was like, "Yeah, we can't include this. this is not safe for work." And so that's what I really liked about the mission, I guess, because I'd spent so much time writing about Apollo 11, I had expected the other missions to follow kind of the same trajectory in not, you know, yeah, going to the moon, but also in tone and mood and atmosphere. But Apollo 12, I mean, fewer people were looking, and they'd already done the big thing, so it didn't really matter what you said. You could kind of get away with a lot. So I really liked that about that mission.
Yeah, it feels a lot more human, right? Like, it just, there's, Apollo 11's very, you know, it's an important mission, obviously, and it's very cool to read about, but just, like, it's hard to identify with, like, superhuman Neil Armstrong, right? Like, he's almost like an alien. He's such a talked about figure, and his, you know, his behaviors and stuff, it's, like, hard to identify with that, right?
Right. I mean, because he became a national treasure, and he became more of a museum exhibit than a real person, mm-hmm. in some ways. And so the Apollo 12 crew, they were just more, yeah, they were regular people, much more relatable. And they didn't have all that pressure on their shoulders. They could say, and I could pull it up right now, but the first words that Pete Conrad said when he stepped onto the surface were, "Whoopee, man, that may have been a small one for Neil, but that's a long one for me." And that, I don't think, would have gone over well if that was the first ever moon landing. So it's just a fun mission, especially when you think about what came next, Apollo 13. Very different. Yeah. That's going to be an interesting story to write next year.
Anthony loves those first words.
I do. Yeah, he's like an inch taller than me, so I'm like, oh yeah, okay, now I get it. You know, there's not a lot of famous short people. There's mostly like Napoleon and then Pete Conrad. And I like that one a lot better, so I can really relate to, like, wow, that was a long jump down this ladder. I dig that.
Right.
And then you had Alan Bean. Alan Bean was a weirdo, yeah. Too.
Right. Yeah, very quirky. I think he was the one that called everyone babe. Yes. There's a lot of babe in the transcripts. I was like, this is really casual. You guys are on the moon. But okay.
Do you think that that's like the, that is the psychological trick, though, is that Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, Mike Collins knew they were doing like a human achievement, and then a 12 was the first one where it was like, maybe this is normal now, like maybe we can just keep doing this, and they were psychologically set up to just treat it as if they were like going out four-wheeling. I don't know. I feel like I would have a hard time getting over that. That's like, you're the second crew, which is like, I guess we're the first of everybody else.
Yeah.
I think that's another reason that the lightheartedness of Apollo 12 surprised me, because the geopolitical stakes had changed for sure. You know, the Americans beat the Russians, the Soviets, excuse me, to the moon. That was a done deal. Everything's fine now. But the stakes in terms of the dangers of the mission, of keeping these men alive, that didn't change. So I thought it was really surprising that they were joking around and being pretty chill about things when they could have died. That could have happened.
Yeah. It must just be like what kind of people they were. Like, you know, I'm just thinking like, because yeah, even if it is the second mission, you're right. Like, it's still kind of scary. Still,
like, can poke a hole in your glove and be done, you know? Like,
yeah.
Right. And I think it was, like, Pete Conrad was known for being a goofy guy and, like, dancing around and humming to himself and singing. So a lot of it was just personality. I mean, I think he was the polar opposite of Neil Armstrong.
And imagine if one of the famous things they did wrong was it Alan Bean who, like, immediately pointed the camera at the sun and destroyed the camera feed that they had?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, imagine if Neil got out and was like, whoops. Guess you can't see us walking around on the moon for the first time. That would not be great.
Yeah. 12 was not televised. And that, I think, is pretty funny, but just goes to show how much, you know, NASA, I think, was more willing to accept mistakes. But yeah.
Yeah.
Fun mission.
The camera stuff is like my favorite story to tell about Apollo 12. I think Anthony's probably heard me tell it like 15 times now, but we'll do it again. Because you have like, that was the first thing, is he blows the video lens on the sun. And that was like only the first one. Because then if you remember, Apollo 12 tried to land, did land next to Surveyor 3. Was that the one that they, it was like the targeted landing practice. And they'll go visit the spacecraft, this robotic one that they'd done. And so Alan Bean had this like great idea. They're going to get this like, you know, that shutter, that the remote shutter that they wanted to do to take a picture of both the astronauts. And then but he like smuggled it on board so that the mission controllers wouldn't know what he was doing. And then they had all these questions like, who took this picture? What was going on? And then he lost the shutter. He couldn't find it. They had gone like hiked all the way out to the Surveyor and he couldn't find it. So then he screwed that photo up and he couldn't do that one. And then he went on and like painted that photo.
Yeah, I think that's probably really cool. Why he got a kick out of painting, because he was like, "Well, clearly I'm not good at photography. I think I'm going to just switch roles here."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
And then I think on landing, it fell out of the compartment and it hit him in the head. The camera, like the Hasselblad or whatever, and then he had to get stitches like when he landed. So
yeah, didn't he come out of the capsule bleeding? Like, I think it was a pretty And speaking of photos, I mean, I just remember this. I don't read my stories after I publish them, so I'm like now thinking back to the story. Speaking of photos, so before 12 launched, the backup crew, I'm sure you know, snuck a bunch of pictures of Playboy bunnies into the astronauts' wrist checklists so that when they were walking around the moon and going through their various procedures, then they were flipping through this little flip book and they were just met with a picture of a nude woman. And as far as women going to the moon, like, I think that's our representation there, which is a shame. I don't think that joke would fly in the year of our Lord 2019.
Yeah.
But no. Yeah, I mean, it was,
nor would Mike Pence be particularly pumped about that, you know? I don't think he would be thrilled of everyone on there. I don't know.
No.
Really the face of artists.
And I wonder if that stuff would come out. If that stuff were to happen today, I wonder if it would come out sooner than the story of these risque pictures, because I think it took a couple of years for that to come out. It was a pretty well kept secret.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
That is a good question.
I could FOIA.
Yeah. Good luck with that. One of the weird things, though. Oh wait, before I had one other question. I know that the Atlantic wouldn't let certain things from the transcript on, but we have much lower standards than that. If you are comfortable with any of the ones that got cut, was there a favorite that you were like, maybe we could get this in, and it got shut down? Or you could say, skip this question, and all of this will be removed from the show.
How many... Who's your audience? Who's listening? Are there children? Kids,
oh, no.
Mute the podcast.
No.
There was one thing about, it was a quote that I found impressive, but it was just too vulgar to include from, I think it was, again, Pete Conrad. He was getting hungry, and he said he was so hungry that he could eat the ass out of a porcupine. Something.
What does that mean? I mean, I don't know. I understand the intent, but like, I've never heard that.
No, and I'm thinking, well, okay, so it's not like a regional Pennsylvania saying?
No.
Because
If it was a regional thing, I think it would be like a groundhog, and it would tie to like Punxsutawney Phil.
Right. Yes. Okay. So maybe he was getting that mixed up. We made a reference to it. We just mentioned something scandalous about a porcupine, and I linked out. And to my readers who were curious, they could just go and find it that way. You will decide whether or not you want to cut this.
Oh, I definitely don't want to cut that. And not only that, so I'm going to start saying that just in regular life. I'm going to make it a regional thing. Be like, yeah, Pete Conrad invented that.
I just Googled it, and there's a Reddit thread that says that idiom makes this person lose their appetite, and then there's like one comment that's like, who says that?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You can't be that's good, so be weird. Colorful.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm curious if you think the rest of the Apollo missions would have been more like that if 13 didn't happen immediately after. Like, do you think that this was unique to the crew? Or do you think that if it continued to be lower and lower stakes with fewer and fewer people watching, would it have been even more off the rails?
I think it would have gotten more off the rails if things with 13 had stayed on the rails. I think that's definitely true. Because I think there's a tendency, it's just natural for people after they achieve one thing to think that the next time they do it, it's going to be easier. That's just the human quality, I think. And I think that 12 showed that NASA couldn't let their guard down. The astronaut corps couldn't let their guard down. Nothing about spaceflight was going to be routine, even if it seemed like it would.
Yeah.
So I think 13 was like definitely a reality check. Yeah.
Similarly, I wonder how many shuttle flights it would have taken to get as off the rails if we didn't have disaster so early in the program. Does that make any sense? Like, if we were 30 years into the shuttle and no one ever died on that thing, things would have been very weird.
You think so? I don't know. I think it probably got pretty weird on shuttle. Like, there was
7 of them. There's a whole mob of people that can pull pranks.
Yeah, and it's like tight quarters. And there were a lot of flights, like even before, you know, before the first accident. So I don't know. I'd be curious. I wonder if there was like less attention on shuttle than there was on Apollo, and more of those transcripts, you know, were even just not even stricken from the transcript, but just not recorded to begin with, right? Like they can just turn the mics off or whatever, and just have. There's probably plenty.
We're giving all this work to Marina to FOIA this now, though.
Right. I think that there is a lot that we don't know, and NASA does make a big deal out of posting a bunch of flight transcripts, whether it's from shuttle or Apollo, online. And it is in NASA's charter to share with the public what they discover, what they find, what they do. But I mean, they're still a government agency at the end of the day, and they're definitely striking stuff from the transcripts that we're never going to see.
Yeah, the whole conversation about drilling that hole in the Soyuz, that is not recorded. That was definitely not picked up.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I still haven't been able to get a clear answer out of NASA where they are with that, like how much the Russians have shared about their investigation and the results about this mysterious hole in the ISS. So I don't know.
I think where they are with that is beats us.
Yeah.
I will keep asking. I'll keep you posted. But yeah, but that's the kind of stuff that I think it's a good reminder that even flying to the ISS and living and working there is not routine. You know, nothing awful has happened there, but it just goes to show that space exploration is not a guarantee, safety guaranteed kind of thing.
Yeah.
This is a pretty good transition, Jake.
It is, but I wasn't done
yet.
Okay,
darn.
Okay, we're going to park transition.
Yeah, park the transition. Remember that, where we were.
Yeah. I wanted to ask Marina, just because of I am a big fan of your writing, so I'm going to brag about you for a little bit here. But I love how you always, you paint good pictures with context, right? So there's not just a story like this is what happened, but you kind of give it a lead up with like these are all the circumstances that make the story interesting, and you're a very colorful writer. And I wanted to just kind of hear from you sort of like how you describe that style and why you write the way you do and report on space the way you do.
Well, to borrow from Pete Conrad, if you can't be good, be colorful.
That was an even better transition. That's good.
So at The Atlantic, I mean, our audience is very different, I think, from other space publications or other places where there are space reporters. Our readers are not, they don't necessarily have science backgrounds. They are just general interest readers. And I was that reader for a long time. I do not have a science background at all. I think I got a C in high school biology. Like,
did better
and
than me.
High school and high school physics I took senior year, so I skipped a lot of class, and which I now regret doing. But so I think that one reason that I like to include a lot of context in my stories is because, I mean, I don't necessarily know all the details, and in order to know what's happening and why it's important and what it means and what in the past has, and that's my cat meowing in the background, and what in the past has informed this thing that's happening, I need to include a lot of context. I learned over the summer when I was reporting on Apollo 11 that people, like some of our readers, still think that there are people going to the moon every year. Some people think that shuttle is still flying. So a lot of it is just a matter of space literacy. You know, I want to tell the full story, not the exhaustive story, because that would take a lot of time and a lot of words, but I want to make sure that our readers know there's a lot of history there. Like, I can't even throw out commercial crew and expect our readers to know what that is.
Yeah.
And 3 years ago, I've been on this beat now 3 years. 3 years ago, I didn't know what commercial crew was.
Hmm. Neither did NASA, based on what we're seeing today. They're still trying to figure it out.
Wow. Okay.
Sorry, that's too good. Salty? Yeah. Too salty?
No, that's okay. Good. Yeah, I just, I love your writing. So you capture still that kind of like the old school way where, like, you know, if an article from you pops up, I'm like, oh, goody. And then I get onto the couch with like my iPad and like, I'm ready to read this. Like, I would get excited about like settling in to read it. So keep up the good work is what I'm going to say.
Thank you. You're making me so uncomfortable. But no, thank you for reading. Please continue.
Are there stories in 2020 that you are hoping to write or expect to write that you're excited about?
Oh, I mean, commercial crew is going to be the story of the year.
Whatever that is.
If NASA astronauts launch from Cape Canaveral next year, that's going to be, in my opinion, the biggest space story of the year. And I'm really excited to do that. So my first time at the Cape was for Falcon Heavy last year. And I didn't know what I was doing. but it was a great experience. And it's, I mean, so I'm based out of Washington, D.C., and I do a lot of my reporting from my desk over the phone. And it was so great to actually just be there, not just to see the launch, which was incredible in and of itself, but just talk to people, like get to know the area. There's so much history there. I mean, it's a space city, and to be surrounded by that was very exciting. And I'll be down in Florida again for Boeing's uncrewed flight, which has now moved to December 20th after, I think it was the 17th, then it moved to the 19th, now the 20th, getting perilously close to Christmas. So I don't know what they're going to do with that. But I think being able to spend more time at the Cape next year to cover that story is going to be really exciting. And I think it's going to excite the public in a way that, you know, robotic space missions really can't.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know what the attendance will be for that launch, because Falcon Heavy was certainly the closest to the shuttle mayhem that the Cape had seen probably since 5-year anniversary, EFT-1. That was pretty nutty down there. And I'm curious to know if crew will get that, you know, back to that spot where there's hundreds of thousands of people coming to see astronauts launch. It's like gonna be, it's tough because it's not, doesn't have the grandeur of a space shuttle, right? But it'll be cool to see what the motivation difference is for when it's the same rocket flying people instead of robotic missions, if that draw is similar, or if it was unique to the shuttle that had that kind of mind space in most of America, that people would like schedule vacations around this. That'll be kind of an interesting test case.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we're past the days of, middle school teachers pulling in TVs into their classrooms so their kids can watch a shuttle launch. But I don't know, maybe this is going to be the year that some teacher is going to live stream SpaceX's webcast. Like, that's the new viewing experience for young people around the country. But I'm really curious to see the turnout and the interest and how many people are going to be paying attention.
Yeah. I think it'll probably be, there's a potential for it to grow pretty crazy in size because you have that sort of draw, like you say, of people flying from, you know, Cape Canaveral for the first time in a long time. But also you layer it in with all the SpaceX glitz and glam, right? Everyone loves the SpaceX live stream. So, they just accidentally put a live stream up. There's 50,000 people waiting in that thing. So it's pretty crazy when you think about it. I think there's a chance for it to be pretty mental down there for DM2.
I think traffic's going to suck.
For sure.
Gonna have to. I remember leaving my Airbnb super early for Falcon Heavy, like 4 hours ahead of time just to like get to the press site. I think it's going to be madness. And you're totally right, because there's a whole, it's like SpaceX cinematic universe is going to be there, you know? Like,
that's an amazing term for it.
That's so good.
Right. It's a completely new contingent of fans and supporters and employees. It's going to be there. It's going to be unprecedented, I think.
Now I'm too excited. You got to be pumped.
Yeah.
Gosh.
I mean, don't get too pumped, because I have no idea when this will happen. And I don't know how to plan my vacation.
I know. It's still a couple months away. It's going to launch on my birthday in February, and it'll be a great birthday present. it'll be awesome.
I think February's early. I can't see that.
Probably
happening.
It's early. Come on. It's early. It's way early.
I'm hoping for like April, because that works a lot better for me.
That's true. That would work for your schedule. Mm-hmm. All right. We'll go April.
No, I'm going on vacation in April. All right, it has to May. Be after that.
Well, then it'd be my birthday present. May be my birthday there present instead of yours, Anthony. It'd
yes. May, we'll do the off nominal meetup at Epcot.
Yeah.
Marina, have you ever been to Epcot? This is the off nominal literacy test. Have you ever done Drink Around the World at Epcot?
When I was. No, I was 12.
Okay, I was going to say.
No Drink Around the World.
Well, then your test can be live at Epcot, whether you start in Canada or Mexico. That is the traditional off-nominal literacy test. Can we get back to my sweet transition?
Yes.
You were talking about how things in space don't always go well. And the namesake of this show is off-nominal. Last year, we had a great year for this. We did the 2018 off-nominal award, and we awarded what went the worst in space in the year 2018. Last year's winner was the saga of MS-09, the drill hole, and the subsequent daggering of that vehicle on a spacewalk, because that was definitely the off-nominal winner.
I still laugh when I think about it.
That was a great spacewalk to watch. That was incredible. You're talking about the cosmonauts like cutting
just
through insulation
it,
to find the hole on the outside of the ISS.
Like, what were they doing?
That was so that was really fun for me to watch, because I'm Russian. And still speak Russian at home. So when I've watched NASA spacewalks and Russian spacewalks, and they're so different. Because the Americans are they're all business. I recently spent a Sunday watching a 7-hour spacewalk for journalism. And it was really soothing, and it was great, and I highly recommend it, because it's just like wonderful, like white noise, them talking about like, oh, do you have the PGT? And like, there's torque, there's a bunch, anyway. But the astronauts are pretty serious, but the Russians will joke around. And with like whoever their Capcom is, they'll joke around and be sarcastic and tease each other. And I just think that's so funny. But yeah, that one spacewalk when they were just trying to get at this hole, I think their Capcom was saying, like, one of the cosmonauts just wanted to keep going and keep going. And the Capcom's like, you're going to ruin your glove. Like, but the cosmonaut's like, but look, I don't want to leave it like this hanging out. It's not going to be pretty. And Mission Control is like, it's not going to be pretty when you cut through your glove. Like, you don't hear that on the NASA.
It's like Apollo 11 to 12. I just think it's like the same thing.
Yes.
Apollo 12, yeah. 100% would have won the 1969 off-nominal award if it existed it back have. Then. MS-09 yes. was a runaway. 2018 was tough, though. We had Zuma. We had MS-09. We had MS-10 in flight abort. We had a lot of good off-nominal events in 2018. So, mm-hmm. tough year to beat. We have a list that we ran through of the things that went wrong in space. So, we're hoping that you can help us pick this winner.
Okay.
If you're okay. So, these are the 2019 off-nominees. That is our name for them. We were pretty clever.
wait, I have to get... let me get a writing utensil. I want to forget.
We can drop these notes.
Okay.
We got notes.
Okay.
Jake, you do the first one. I'll drop notes into the Skype chat.
We got a professional journalist on the line.
Yeah, right.
She's gonna take notes.
a whole steno pad on us. Where do we want to start? Because this is a tough year. I'm not going to lie.
I don't think it's as tough as you say it is, though. There's some wacky stuff that happened this year.
All right. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with, well, let's just go on your list here. So, InSight, Mars InSight.
Well, that's a you thing. That's a Mars beat. That's you.
HP3.
That was going to be the first thing I was going to say.
Yeah. Heat flow physical properties probe. Slow going to get this little probe down in the ground. And then, like, so the whole year was already like an off nominal, like, this thing just needs to get underground. And then all of a sudden it was like, bloop. It just like shot out like a, I can't think of a good analogy. I was trying to think of one.
Like
today, but there's
an ass of a porcupine.
Like the ass of a porcupine.
Oh.
Sorry.
I didn't think we were going to revisit that, but that's okay.
I emailed you the list, by the way, Marina.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
It just shot out of the ground like crazy. And like that was like, and it was in 20 minutes and we were all on Twitter because there was no like press release. It was just the feed of the images.
Yeah, there were
coming
all images started coming back.
And everyone's like, what is going on right now?
Like, is this an out of time like, kind of thing where it was posting them late or is this actual?
But it just like shot right out of there. And like, that was like shocking to me. I just remember sitting in front of my, I was like at this desk right now in front of my computer watching it. And I was like, oh, this is not good. But then I think it got even worse though with the aftermath, because there was no clear press release except we had like Thomas Zurbuchen like out there trying to spin that the mission was fine, it's just the German things broke, it's fine, it's not even part of the mission, I actually forgot it was even on the spacecraft, it's not a big deal, it's not a level one requirement, don't worry about it. which I thought was just like wacky, like I had no idea that they'd try and take that route in terms of spin. So I don't know, what did you think watching it right now?
I mean, they definitely tried to downplay what was happening, but even like I remember them hyping up this instrument so much before launch. This was going to be, I think the headline that we published for the story for InSight's launch was something about like the dawn of interplanetary geology. This probe was going to burrow deep into the surface and unlock the secrets of Mars and its interior. Yeah. Yeah. And then you're right. The thing gets stuck and they're like, oh, well, I didn't see that coming. And we're doing our very best to get this thing going. They had a pretty good press release with all the things that they said they were going to try. So they definitely made like a big deal out of like the efforts that they were going to put into rescuing this instrument, but I don't think anything's working so far. And it's like, this gets at one of my favorite things about this beat is the constant sense of helplessness that we have when we send robots out to space to do the work for us. Like, how many of those scientists and engineers wish they could just fly over there and jam that thing into the ground?
Yeah. Yeah, we talk about that a lot in our Discord community. It was just like I'll just push it in with my thumb and it'll be over in like 10 seconds and it'll be not a big deal at all. And then, but it's been like 8 months with this stupid spike.
Right, and they have like a replica that they use for simulations here, and they all it took I think was a nudge to get it going again. So that must be really frustrating. Yeah, it's sad.
All right, so that's a good contender.
Yeah,
that's a good one. High stakes, bad result so far. I'm feeling good about it. Expensive, a lot of money on that one, which definitely was in the running last year with Zuma. Everyone said that cost a lot of money, so that definitely was a. We've definitely taken budgetary concerns into account here. If we want to stick on the lander category, we did have dual moon landers, Barasheet and Vikram, that didn't work out the last couple hundred meters. I think I would give the edge, if we were going to pick a moon lander, I would give the edge to Vikram because of the way that India handled this, which was like, didn't hear from it, must be on the moon, don't know where yet, we'll let you know in a couple of months, and have said like almost nothing about it. And then even when we were at IEC, there was no mention of the lander anywhere. And the whole ISRO booth, there was all of the references were scrubbed. There were clearly spots on their signs that it was supposed to talk about Vikram, and there was nothing. Like they just did white out.
Chandrayaan orbiter on one side of the poster, and then like an empty square
just
here
blank on the other
on
side.
The other side. So,
the handling of that, I think for me, puts like Barasheet. I'm like, yeah, you guys just, you know, you didn't land. It's fine. Vikram, they were like explicitly trying to, you know, forget about it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Right. Is that a bad enough? Was it too expected to make this a winner?
I think these are definitely contenders. I think the response from the two different sides is not surprising. Like, that's why I don't want to be too hard on India for just, you know, not providing any details on the aftermath and just wanting to ignore it. Because in the case of the Israeli lander, I mean, that was, again, these are two national efforts. But for India, it's a matter of, you know, the government setting out to do this thing. And then when you fail, you want to cover that up. Whereas with the Israeli lander, that was mostly the work of a nonprofit. And I mean, Israel has a huge like startup culture, ton of startups there. And so they have the whole like, oh, we messed up, but failure is good. Failure is what you need, you know, to reach success. Let's just keep going. So the responses from the two different sides didn't surprise me. But I don't know which one. They're both.
You're right, though, because they announced, oh, we'll do Barasheet 2. And then they said, not doing that. I still think that's because they made that partnership with Firefly to build that kind of lander for the NASA program. So maybe they said the next lander will be for the NASA contract. That's my assessment, but I don't know. Good contenders.
But did you watch live the live streams for the landings?
Yes.
It's tense. It's very tense.
It's awkward. Yeah.
Especially because then you start seeing something on the screen, right? Where you're like, uh-oh, that's not the right graph that we want.
So, because I have, every once in a while at my office, I try and get all the non-space people excited about something. And so, like, the Barasheet landing was, like, in the middle of the day. It was perfect. So I was like, I threw out, like, a meeting request to, like, all these people in my office. And I was like, hey, if you want to see a cool space thing, like, Israelis are going to land on the moon. Like, come. I blocked like 20 minutes off, come to this room and I'll put it up on the screen and we can watch it. And so I had like 10 people in this room. They were like, what is this? I came here because I like you, but I don't know what this is. And so I'm like, okay, I'm like touting it up. It's going to land. It's so cool. And then they had the telemetry up there and they're kind of like half interested because like telemetry is not really that interesting if you're not into space. And then I'm just kind of like, uh-oh, because it was like, something's wrong with that number. And they're like, what? And I'm like, this is not going right. And then it was just like, there's anticlimactic ending to it.
I guess and just go back to work.
Like, it was super awkward. There's like, okay, well, I got a meeting. Bye.
I need a good German word for the singular tension and fear that one feels watching those live streams because it's unlike anything else. It's different from a rocket launch, I think. I don't know. There's just something about it. It frays my nerves.
Yeah. You feel it like in your chest. Like it's like a knot.
Very visceral.
Yeah. Huh. All right, so maybe we go to some human spacecraft stuff. So Starliner, this one might be my favorite. I don't know.
Yeah, this is a real contender.
I went off on this one, but the parachute for the abort test. So the abort test goes off and the spacecraft comes in for landing, but one of the parachutes did not deploy. But it landed safely. Everything was fine. But I think it would have been fine if they had just come out and said, yeah, one of the parachutes didn't work and we figured it out and it's fine. But they like tried to cover it up and they're like, this is not a parachute failure. It was a parachute deployment connection failure or something. And I thought it was so funny because like the parachute didn't come out. That means it's failed. I don't know how you spin that, but that like made it the storyline last much longer than it needed to last.
Well, and it made better by being forced to live stream it, apparently. from what we know, by Jim Bridenstine. JB, our JB fan club is where this is the headquarters of the Jim Bridenstine fan club, Marina. I don't know if you know that. Long story. But JB was like, you guys got to live stream this. And Larry from Boeing, our friend, set up a live stream. And I am wondering the alternate universe in which that was not a thing that happened, the live stream, when we would have had to have Marina FOIA this to find out about this parachute situation.
But live streams are the future, especially when what you're live streaming costs taxpayer money. There's no way around that.
Yeah.
but then to not attach the parachute, like, come on.
And I think that I'm not quite sure yet why space companies don't realize that the more you call something not what it is, the more you say, oh, deployment failure, anomaly, euphemisms, you know, it's only going to draw more attention and it's probably not going to be, it's more suspicious.
Yeah. Yeah. Because then it makes a whole secondary wave of stories where everyone's like, they're trying to cover it up, but here's what actually happened.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of live streaming, can we just say like the SLS core stage that they just, you know, twisted to pieces? Why did they not live stream that? That would have been so cool. They
had this whole huge video already.
A whole huge hydrogen tank that they test to failure and the whole thing ruptures. That would have been an awesome video to see. Ah, I'm mad about that one.
Nobody else has strong feelings, but I'm just like, why didn't they post a video yet? And it's like, is it an optics thing? It's got to be an optics thing.
Maybe.
Proprietary information? I mean, I don't know. But that's always the case.
I think they were worried about like a Tesla Roddy article about how the SLS tank failed.
they need to like have like a post a video with like a floating banner like this that just like, this was on purpose. This was on purpose. That just bounces
huge
around.
Watermark.
So you can't Photoshop it out. And yes. It's just like, no matter where.
I like that.
Oh, that'd be good.
Not a deep fake.
All right, no. So we got a long list left. Let's start banging these out. Dragon 2 was the other human spaceflight failure. This thing blew up on the static fire stand. That's a rough one.
That's like the serious off-nominal award. Yeah. It's like, there's nothing funny to say about that one.
That's number one for me for the year, I think.
Yeah?
Well, no, okay, number...
If you have any, Marina, please jump in. Like, let us know if you have one.
No, I just thought of one that I thought was worse, but it was 2018 because I have no sense of time anymore in my life. No, I was thinking of the Soyuz abort, but that was
2018,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I think the Crew Dragon ranks top for me just because I remember, and I'll move quickly through this, but I just remember being there for the launch and the mood was just, everyone was ecstatic. Like, Elon was giddy as hell. It really looked, all signs pointed to SpaceX being on track to like do something big this year. And then just to see that go up literally in flames, that was just a huge setback.
And that video that leaked was particularly rough, you know? Like, you just can't imagine, you just think about people sitting in that and it blowing up, right? That's the human reaction to that video is, imagine if I was sitting in that thing. That's rough. That's a rough one. And I'm sure there was, again, with the leak, with the information that gets out, because information is like water, that's one that, you know, they wish didn't leak, but would have come out eventually. And that's a rough one. Jake, that's got to be higher on your list than I think it is already.
It's pretty high. Yeah, for sure.
We had a couple of launch ones. We had the Iranian situation this year. They had three failures very quickly in a row. And the third one, we had that whole situation where Trump tweeted the photo that he took of a piece of paper and then tweeted it, and that declassified the existence of that satellite, which everyone knew about anyway, but now we saw how high-res our satellites were, and then all the satellite trackers were like, this was the exact one, here's where it was at in its orbit. Now we know that Hubble Space Telescope that points at Earth is legit. So I think the whole that whole situation is a good geopolitical off-nominal situation.
Quite the range here. It's a great list.
we're everywhere. We're everywhere.
All right. I don't know if that's going to really hit the top three, though.
Maybe not. Yeah.
Next one is very high up for me because I have a particular hate of the Omega launch vehicle. This was their static fire. At the end, the tail cone of their solid booster blew up, and they called it an observation. They said we had an observation at the end of the test, and that it wasn't actually an explosion, it was an observation. So this one, because of that element, I put almost number one, because I love that kind of cover-up of like, no, it was, like you were just saying about, no, it was an anomaly, or it was a fast fire. This was an observation. And that's a great term.
That was peak spin. I thought anomaly was bad and misleading, but observation.
An observation.
That's like getting like dangerously Soviet, you know? Like it's all on a spectrum. And yeah.
And boy, do we know Northrop Grumman Launch Services knows how to get dangerously Soviet.
Hey.
Hey, got him. two Starship things made the list. Number one, they had that nose cone they were building way back in the day that then just got blown over in a windstorm and crumpled on the ground. That was pretty great to me. For me, that's kind of a Three Stooges situation of like, oh, Jim, you didn't tie down the thing. I like that one. And then recently we had the overpressure situation where they were tanking the Starship prototype and then the top blew off. And I very much appreciate the video of that.
Yeah, it was a good video.
Yeah.
Because it just went up and up and up.
Are these two, like, since SpaceX is being a little fast and loose with Starship anyway, are these as good as, should they make the list at all? Because we know that their goal is to kind of be off nominal.
Yeah, it wasn't really that off nominal for them, is it?
Right. They love blowing up spaceships.
They do.
I think a requirement has to be presence of flames.
Okay, that's fair, because this is kind of like a, you know, a bottle popping off.
Right.
That's true. They have to have fast fire.
We can redefine that beyond. I don't know.
I like this, the presence of flames. Okay. Well, I mean, no actual flames, but on the list I have Mars One going bankrupt. Yeah.
They were always bankrupt in my eyes.
This is just filing the paperwork, right?
Okay, we're getting zero reaction out of Marina. So I don't know if her video froze or if she's sat over Mars One.
Well, no. I mean, there a couple of people have done some really great stories on it, but I think there's so much more of that story to tell. It's on my bucket list of stories to write because
there's like a million threads in there. Like it's
Fire Festival in space.
It is. It's the Space Fire Festival.
That's a great headline. I might take that.
Steal it. Jake made it up. I just said it again.
Did I make it up? I thought you made it up.
I don't know. Did it was probably the off nominal after we watched those Fire Festival documentaries when we were talking about it.
So. Yeah, maybe. Okay, I'm down into the dredges of this list. I don't even actually know if I want to give all these.
You had the Artemis churn on here where there was like eight different stories about how it's going to be delayed to 2021 for EM1. Yeah. Then they were going to consider commercial launchers. And then Mike Sarangelo showed up for a week and essentially was that Simpsons gif where he comes in, hangs his hat up, turns around, grabs a hat, and is out of the door again.
So there's some good
political churn.
Yeah.
Right. No funding for Artemis. That probably counts.
No funding situation, but they're still keeping on this 2024 thing.
Totally. And it's funny too, because so Marina, for context, we do like a weekly news show, each of us for our main shows. And we went back through all the headlines, and I found three separate instances where I reported a headline that said SLS may slip to 2021 at like different points in the year. Like the news just kept coming up, and I just kept reporting on it, and I couldn't remember the other times that I had done it until I actually looked back. So that was pretty fun. SLS, but SLS is like too easy of a target for some of these, though. It's like, it's not interesting.
We had an ExoMars. They were having parachute issues.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of regular. Yeah.
Parachutes are hard.
Yeah, it's pretty pedestrian to make this list. You've got one in here about Orbit Beyond, how they were awarded a task order and then decided that they were not solvent anymore.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Similarly, we had that whole situation where Vector Space, the launch company that makes those little rockets, or we're going to make those little rockets, were in back-to-back days awarded an Air Force launch contract and the next day announced that they were closing up shop. Yeah. That's a good little combo. But again, still not great. So I'm thinking that, what do we say, what would you think our top three is, Marina? Dragon 2. You're big on Dragon 2.
Yes, Dragon 2 for sure.
How do we feel about observation? Insight.
Sorry, I'm being difficult. Insight. I think one of them has to be one. There has to be one moon lander in the top three.
Okay.
I don't know.
One moon lander. Okay. Right.
If you had to choose Vikram, Vikram. Or Barish,
yeah, I'm on Vikram. Yeah. Sure.
They printed posters for IAC by removing stuff that was on the. Supposed to be on the poster.
And I went up to the ISRO booth at IAC and I was like, hey, I want to have someone come on the show to talk about I think I was talking about the Mars mission, and they were just like, this guy like very like calmly slid like a business card across the table, and he was like, call this number. They will connect you with the embassy. The embassy will put you in touch with this person. And I was like, I don't want to do all that. I have a microphone in my pocket. Is there anybody here that can talk to me right now? And he was just like, call this number. And it was like super, super creepy. And then the Vikram makes me think of that. So that's a memory for me.
That was very specific.
I think you've sold me on observation. Because that's a good mix. We got failed lunar landing, floated empty astronaut crew capsule, and observation. I think that's right.
I love the observation. Would be my top three. I love the observation, and it's hard for me to. I know that. I don't know. Insight's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking.
Man, this is tough. Actually, you're right, Jake. This is tough.
I think the reason I wouldn't go with Insight is because there have been so many Mars missions. Like something was bound to go wrong, and now that it has. There are other Mars missions. There are going to be future Mars missions. That planet is plenty studied.
You're playing the stats game here. I see.
I like that. Does that sway you, Jake? Fair.
Okay, so how do we come to a decision on this? I don't remember how we did this last year.
I thought the guest chose.
It was just us two last year, and it was incredibly easy to pick the time that astronauts sliced up a spacecraft in orbit.
Marina wants to pick. I like how we didn't even tell her we were doing this, and she's so invested in it. She wants to pick the one.
I don't know.
I'm kidding. I think this is going to be a Dragon 2, though.
Because when you think about, like, I think Dragon 2 is gonna stand out in the long view of history in the same way that the drill hole on the Soyuz did.
Yeah.
Omega's going to be irrelevant by summer.
Okay, I have a suggestion. Right. We do two awards.
Okay.
One of them is the serious anomaly award, and one of them is the funny one.
Okay. It's like a listener's choice kind of thing.
And we do Dragon 2 for the serious one, and we do observation for the funny one.
I like it. All right, confirmed. That's good. I'm in on that.
Good with that.
Congratulations, Northrop. I should get their music ready. Where is it? Here we go. Congratulations, Northrop Grumman. You have won the funny off-nominal award, and SpaceX has won the serious off-nominal award for 2019.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. That was good.
Picks. Got any picks, Jake?
Yes, I do have picks. I actually have a lot of picks, and I don't know which one to do right now. Last episode, I was so busy, and I just, like, crashed my prep program, and I had no pick, and now I have like four. So I'll pick the most relevant one. So I recently watched, this is old news now, and no one's going to be really like impressed by this, but I finally got a chance to watch the Year in Space documentary on Netflix, which was like, I don't know, like 12 episodes or something, but they're like short episodes, like really tiny ones. I binged it all in one night. So it's Scott Kelly's trip to space. And I thought it was really, really good. I was not expecting it to be like really insightful, but I found that it was, like it did a good job of reminding you how human it is to go to space. You know, like this year in space thing, we kind of just think of it as this like, well, you go there, it's a science experiment, you got a twin on the ground, it's tough, whatever. We go to the ISS all the time, no big deal. Here's some biomedical information about it. But this was like a lot about him and his family and you know, the living through that year and how long it really probably felt like. And I thought it was really kind of humanizing, and I really enjoyed it. So that's my pick.
I have not seen that.
You should go watch it.
I kind of totally forgot that it existed.
Yeah. Okay. I got a little like emotional in some of the scenes, so it was good.
Whoa. Oh.
Yeah.
Look at that. I also
is that rare?
I don't know. I guess I never really thought of Jake as a movie crier, but I also watch stuff. I feel like this is kind of a, I've been traveling a lot, so I haven't had a lot of time to like invest in new things. So I'm doing a little midterm update on For All Mankind and The Mandalorian, which I've just been keeping up on.
Yep.
Both, no spoilers for anything. Spoiler-free feelings at this point, midway through both seasons. Similarly, I feel like I'm enjoying the world in which they exist, and I'm enjoying just like existing in that world for 30 minutes, an hour at a time. I feel like the plots are a little wandery, and I'm not quite sure if they're like, if somebody said, what is the show about? I can just tell them the setting that it takes place in, but I'm not sure that I could say like a theme for each show. And For All Mankind is kind of working its way through NASA scandals of the day, both in like mission stuff, but also people stuff. They're kind of like picking the things from NASA history that we've all kind of got our like, you know, things that are marked off in our history books. And they're doing their own take on what that situation would have been like back then. So I like the kind of pondering on that, but feels like I'm not sure where it's going. Still enjoying it, still watching it. And both is true for All Mankind and The Mandalorian.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Baby Yoda.
Baby Yoda.
Baby Yoda. That's not even a spoiler anymore. Don't worry.
It's not.
That's my only contribution.
You do have a cup of tea in front of you, so you can be the meme.
It's
like
true.
You could live be the meme right now.
That's true. Yeah. I have enjoyed that meme. That's great. Okay. I have not seen The Mandalorian. I'm like, this is enough. The meme is enough.
Do you have a pick, Marina?
I do. My pick is a little forward-looking. It is a book that comes out in March 2020, so consider it a New Year's resolution to buy this book. It's by my good friend and fellow space reporter, Sarah Scholes. It's called They Are Already Here, UFO Culture and Why We See Saucers, which I think is just a newly hugely relevant story, at least since 2017, when the New York Times came out with that story about the Pentagon's UFO surveillance program, which may not have actually been what it was. I mean, Sarah's done some last minute reporting, but she is a fantastic writer. She wrote a book last year profiling Jill Tarter, the SETI pioneer, called Making Contact. And that was such a great book. And I don't read that many space books because I'm like, oh, I just spent all day working on this. I'm not sure I want to read it for fun, but I recommend Sarah. And I don't really know that much about UFO culture. I think that's like a blind spot for me because we try to write about things that are a little easier to prove. But I think it's going to be a great book.
You are, oh man, Jake, I got a great idea. We got to get her on for the March episode and we got to get Tom DeLonge on.
Oh, no.
We got to do a joint show.
That would be something.
We gotta do it.
I don't know if I can handle that.
We gotta do that. We gotta work on that. Yeah, that'd be such a good episode.
And we'll get Robert Bigelow in there just for fun too. That'd be good.
Oh man.
Awesome. Okay. Marina, is there any articles that you've written recently that you wanna, you know, brag about and put out there on the internet? What's like, if listeners have never heard of you before, what should they read first and what should they do to follow you more on the internet?
Well, I would recommend that they follow me on Twitter, which is just Marina Corin, because I tweet all my stories because I want everyone to read them. So that's the best way. Or one of these RSS feeds,
yes,
that The Atlantic has. Sign up for that.
That'll be in the show notes because it's my favorite link. It's my favorite link on The Atlantic.
Let's see. But a recent story that I really liked working on, it was a new research study of astronauts who spent up to 6 months on the ISS. And the scientists found that the blood flow in these astronauts in one particular vein in their neck was really affected by microgravity. So the experience of weightlessness basically caused the blood flow in this vein to either become stagnant or start moving in the opposite direction. And one astronaut in the study actually, I don't know if it's a he or a she, they didn't release the identity of these participants, but they were doing an ultrasound on their own neck, being guided by someone back on Earth telling them what to do, and they discovered their own blood clot in this vein. And they were pulled from that research study because after that it became a clinical case. It was no longer a research case. And that was the first time that anyone had seen that type of side effect in human spaceflight. And I wrote about that recently and talked to a bunch of people who study this, and they were all surprised. Not surprised that there's still so much we don't know about spaceflight, but just surprised because blood clots are not good.
No.
So
certainly.
An important story about our future.
Yeah. I read that story. It was really good. It's that's a wacky, like, result, like backwards blood flow. That caught a lot of headlines. It really kind of got around.
Right. Yeah. But nothing truly bad happened. So that's almost encouraging because apparently these types of clots can develop in a matter of hours or days. And if they were up there for 6 months and nothing went down, there's a silver lining, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm still going to try to avoid it personally.
Yeah. I'm going to try and not get a blood clot.
Trying to get not backwards flowing neck blood.
That's the medical, that's the clinical. Yeah,
my wife's
for
a doctor. I sent her the link and I said, would you make a term for this called backwards flowing neck blood? And
she said no.
It was a no. BFNB. That's all I got.
Okay.
Well, we out of here?
I think we're done.
That was 2019 Off Nominal Awards. Thank you so much, Marina, for being the 2019 Off Nominal Award giver.
Thank you. It has been an honor.
Awarder.
It was an honor just to be nominated to give out this award.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. End of test.